Cool. Check it out. Hi, everyone. This is Faye from Faye's World Media and coming to you on a Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. And I was actually having a very tired day earlier, but I'm so energized to be here with Jaron Lucas. Let me briefly introduce you, Jaron. I'm going to dive right into today's live stream.
Sounds good.
All right. So Jaron is the CEO and founder of the non-GMO dog food brand, Yum Wolf. And I absolutely love it. I actually tested the food, the treats on my favorite neighborhood dog, Ben, English Bulldog, and he just lost his mind. He loved it so much. And their premium air-dried food is personalized for every dog's breed, driven by data, analytics, and 250 clinical studies. Previously, Jaron founded VC-backed Coinsetter, which he sold in 2016. He also worked for JP Morgan and graduated from Rice University on the President's Honor Roll. Besides dog nutrition, he's passionate about history, biochemistry, and daily meditation. So I highly recommend you check out Yum Wolf. I included a link below, so definitely check it out. Currently, you guys are offering a special 50% off of your 7-day trial offer. So I think it's going to be absolutely loved by dog moms, dads, owners in general. So welcome, Jaron. So glad you're here.
Yeah, thanks for the plug. We're very proud about what we've created at Yum Wolf.
I am very intrigued as well. I'm so thrilled that you reach out to me. So there's so many different career paths that you've already taken, but we're going to start with the most recent one, which is Yum Wolf. And I don't own a dog, as you know, but I love dogs. Many neighborhood dogs are really best friends with me. So please tell me about your origin story of starting this brand. Like, what triggered this coming from investment banking, you know, Coinsetter and all that to a dog food company?
You know, long story short, I was very long crypto in the 2018 boom and crash. Mm. Very long ICO tokens. And so after that, that was the difference between where I was like in the spring versus where I was financially in the fall that year was so drastic that it was a major hit to my ego. And so I basically spent the next year in meditation and came out on the other side of that. I mean, meditation is still a very important part of my life. I meditate 40, 45 minutes a day and sometimes more. And in fact, that's what I was doing right before this. And you know, I think that as I went through that experience and I changed personally so much, I came out on the other side really saying I wanted to do something that was going to have a positive, tangible impact on the world. And so everything I had done before that was really in tech. Like I had started one of the first venture capital backed Bitcoin exchanges in 2012, which I sold to Kraken in 2016, still one of the largest out there today. Wow. But I was feeling at that point in just doing tech, even though I think tech's cool. I mean, like this whole AI era that we live in is like super exciting. But I guess I just wasn't feeling like tech was having a tangible impact on people's lives. Like in the end, we eat food every day. And that is to me, one of the most foundational things that there is. And so I came out on the other side of this with a few business principles that I wanted to go by. One was I want to do something in an industry that's been here forever, always going to be here. And, and you know, when you look at the state of dog food today, dog nutrition, it's so terrible. Like all you have to do is walk the aisles of Petco just to see all those bags of dry kibble, which are super inflammatory for our dogs. And I don't mean that in the way of like a woo-woo type of inflammatory thing. I mean it in like, dry kibble is made with crappy ingredients and then cooked in a way that oxidizes all the fats, turning them into free radicals. And that's why there is no such thing as a non-inflammatory dry kibble. And so, you know, I feel like I've made it my personal mission to really focus on something I care about. That is nutrition for humans and dogs. But dogs have been with us for 30,000 years. They're such an important part of humans' lives. They're really like a deep source of happiness for a lot of us. And so it's my goal to help dogs live longer. And that's really what we're doing at Yum Wolf.
Wow. I love that message because to be honest, as soon as I've grown to love dogs at a very young age. I grew up in Beijing, China. And as you can imagine, like most of us lived in a condo, still do today. So there are not a lot of big dogs, and occasionally run into some big ones. And I'm so excited. And, you know, there's not a lot of place really for them to run around. So I then realized that many dogs don't really live a very long life. And especially the breeds that we were so excited about. And I discovered like English bulldogs don't live, mountain dogs, for instance, they live on average like 8 to 10 years. It's just like, I can't even fathom like what it's like to lose a dog like that. And I really realized by talking to owners that they have a lot of health issues. And coming from someone who also had a lot of like digestive issues and things like that, as I mentioned in my email, I just find this to be so necessary and something not to be overlooked. And with that said, I'm excited just even looking at the package. Number one, the design is so cute and everything, but also I noticed you personally cook everything like 170 degrees Fahrenheit, so the nutrition's not lost. So could you maybe talk about like the baking and the making process? Like I literally imagine like Jaren start baking in your own kitchen and figuring that out. Like what was the beginning like?
Yeah, we cook it at very low temperatures through this air drying process that helps, as you mentioned, retain the nutrients. This is a really big concern for pet parents. I almost think people care more about it for their dog than themselves a lot of times. You know, people get very serious about the way that our dog's food is cooked. And one is like, we want to make sure that like all the B vitamins are still inside. Like the longer and the higher temperature you cook something, a lot of these vitamins and minerals break down. And so, you know, that's one thing is like, it's a very expensive cooking process, but I've been kind of obsessive in this company about optimizing our product, probably way too much. That has made our product pretty expensive. It's about the same price as every other online brand, at maybe slightly cheaper than a couple of the fresh food brands. But, you know, we've been very focused on like little things like no peas, no legumes, no rice, no potato, these like really common inflammatory ingredients. And then the biggest one that I care a lot about and I find a lot of customers connecting with is no seed oils. Mm-hmm. Seed oils is something we're hearing a lot about lately. And it's really a big topic in my book, The Canine Coq Omega Effect. In the book, yes, there it is. Thank you so much. Man, I'm so glad to have it out. It was a lot of work.
Oh, we need to talk about that portion too, for sure.
Yeah, writing a book is no joke, but I really wanted to take a lot of the research that I've been doing. At this point, I've read over 3,000 clinical studies since starting the company, and I've been applying my data analytics skills to pet food. Mm-hmm. And so this is like one of the many ways that I think we've been in effect creating the modern dog food, I like to say. Mm-hmm. One of the big parts of it, though, is like the fats that go in it. Seed oils like safflower oil, sunflower oil, and canola oil are very high in omega-6 and are almost in every dog food out there. Mm-hmm. Now, you got to wonder why this is. And it gets all into just like the corporate state of pet food. You know, Purina invented this machine in the, you know, kind of like the last century. Maybe like the 1950s, 1960s, they invented the hot extruder. And so this is what Cheerios are made out of too, all owned by the same company, Nestle. But essentially this machine, I truly think that this machine is like at the core of our current obesity crisis and the diabetes epidemic that we're in today as humans. Unfortunately, dogs have twice the rates of diabetes as they did about 25 years ago as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of this can be blamed there. It's not the only culprit. Another one is certainly these seed oils that are extremely inflammatory. And so I dive into this a lot in my book. You know, the fats we feed to our dog matter. So like as a company at Yum Wolf, we've really focused on gut health, like you were saying. And so we tend to see a lot of dogs who have either skin allergies or digestive issues. And there are so many variations of that and diabetes. So like, these are things that we've really tried to formulate our food around and just really trying to make something better. But it all starts with using natural ingredients. Like if you look at these giant pet food brands, like you will never find someone who hates Purina more than me. Purina is the absolute worst garbage that we're feeding our dogs, and they're doing a true disservice to humanity. Mm-hmm. They also happen to own one of the largest veterinary clinics. So do I think they're purposefully trying to harm dogs? No. But do they have an incentive to improve the system we're in? They don't. And mm-hmm. they're not trying to do anything there. So, you know, one of the big things that I am hoping to help people recognize is, like, in order to meet the omega-6 requirements that dogs do need, we don't need seed oils. Like, we can include things just like meat. But mm-hmm. if you look at the brands who started using these seed oils in their recipes, if you look at just the first three ingredients, like, the first ingredient might be corn, and the second one might be corn gluten meal. That's very, very common in these top, just like the absolute largest dry kibble brands. And so, you know, pretty similar stuff that we see in human nutrition too, but it is a lot worse in dog food. Like, you're really getting a lot of the bottom of the barrel tactics that these major corporations are using. Mm-hmm. And I kind of touch on this towards the end of the book, because I really hope to inspire people to start talking about this. Mm-hmm. It's a major problem that we have. And I think we see it all over. Like, there is a sense that we live in a time period that isn't, like, the most wholesome. It's mm-hmm. sort of like, I think it was JP Morgan or something that just bought something like 100 million acres of forest land, and they're using that to create carbon credits on top of it. And it's, like, basically just a tax scheme. It's just, this is way too prevalent. And so I'm mm-hmm. hoping to kind of, at least for people who want to kind of, like, vibe with the Yum Wolf brand, hopefully help create progress that ultimately can lead to something very positive.
Yeah. I think the message is very strong here. And I do feel, I think it sounds like, you know, there's that level, not so much of pain, but, you know, we want to make certain things way more accessible by people, recognizing that it can be more expensive because the process in terms of the quality of the ingredients is the reason why it costs more. And I can say that even just from a human standpoint, that the moment that I chose to go gluten-free in 2020, I was lucky enough that finally the market had way more accessible, affordable ingredients. But even looking forward a few years before that, a lot of my friends who are celiac, who have to be going gluten-free, just couldn't even find anything. You know, there are not a lot of options, and the ones that are there are from Whole Foods, and they're all fairly expensive. So I'm just curious, Jaron, I know you're very technical, you're very creative. Do you see the trends of, like, maybe quality dog food to that price to come down, not eventually to Petco or kind of store-bought food, but do you think, like, it will be more affordable by more people later on?
I do. And actually, we're going to be launching a new product in a couple of months, currently labeled on our website as Perfect Chow, about to be called Perfect Feast. But we're going to be launching that in a couple of months, and it'll, in my opinion, it's going to be the best dog food out there, period. Like, just period, period, period. And it's also going to be 35% cheaper than Perfect Kibble. And so I attribute that to me getting to meet other millennials who are actually, like, innovating in how to cook and manufacture food. Mm-hmm. When you deal with a lot of these, like, really old school manufacturers, they don't want to change things. They don't want to add new ingredients. It's like, it's pulling teeth with these co-packers. And so I hope that if my co-packer is listening to me right now, like, one, very thankful to have you, I'd love you, but also please, like start making progress. Yeah. It's very frustrating.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, as our generation comes into play and really starts improving, because we care, that's already making a big difference. And then I think what I'm really excited about next is, like, for all of these manufacturing facilities that, like, are still very manual. That's the hard part about Perfect Kibble. Not only did I get rid of all the cheap ingredients, but we're also very manual in our cooking process. Like, each little, if you see them, they're like these little nuggets of mm-hmm. like soft and chewy food, and it's real food. It's like, the number one ingredient is fresh chicken or beef. And then we have eggs, and then we have, like, coconut oil, which is, like, definitely not the cheapest ingredient, but mm-hmm. you know, it's a very important thing to me to use the right fats. And I think that that's a reason why we've seen so many success stories as a brand. Like a lot of dogs, you know, every dog's different, but you know, a lot of dogs will come to us and like some have even been able to get off of allergy medication just by switching to our food. So it's something that makes me really happy. And I think that when we hit this next level in the next like 5 to 10 years of actually, instead of trying to retrofit these old school kind of like cooking environments, but instead we just put AI robotics into it and like, you know, really start to bring down the cost of cooking these things and allowing it to be more agile, that's when I really think that we're going to see a lot of these prices come down. So that's my hope. Expensive ingredients are always going to be more expensive though. And so I think that that education can be very tough. In fact, I've been trying to figure out a Facebook ad to put together around this because I'm like, how can I put like the cost of Purina, or let's not even go that low. Like Purina would be like below, if this is like baseline, like Purina is negative. So like, okay. So like Merrick maybe is here as like a higher quality dry kibble, still pretty awful. And then Yum Wolf's like way up here. And to show people that like the cost, if you really do the math of like all these middlemen for most like Merrick, for any company to be in Petco alone means that they have to pay 40% to Petco. They have to then pay 40% to a broker. And then they have to make like whatever profit they're making. Let's call that between 30 and 50%. So back into the math of like what the actual ingredient cost that's going into these like pretty terrible cheap foods. Well, when you look at something like ours, where it's a more expensive cooking process, people go into that, but also just the flat out ingredients of our food are cost more than like Purina alone. Well, definitely more than Purina, but like also Merrick and a lot of these other brands. And so, you know, I've been trying to figure out this pie chart to communicate it to people. I haven't figured it out yet, but I think that like once people really start feeding themselves healthier food is like, you know, they do tend to like quickly start to think about their dog.
I like where you're going with this and the corner of the conversations that I think we need to tap into, because a lot of our audiences are listening to, watching the video podcast, listening to the audio version. They're also small business owners and creative entrepreneurs. And I feel like this conversation is very creative. Like, I don't think it, you know, you won't be able to create a brand like this if your mind is not in the right place and trying to figure out what could be different. This is truly revolutionary. And I would love to take a look at the chart, the design that you have, because I realize people are willing to pay more once they're educated. I mean, at least starting with a smaller percentage of the population, and they want to know where things come from, where things are going, like you said, especially with the millennials. I'm an older millennial, but also I think the Gen Z population quickly, they want to know everything. Including, you know, my young cousin who's now 28, you know, she was the one who introduced me to like environmental friendly, eco-friendly clothing. And one thing that I remember struggling with, one thing I loved seeing was always on the label that you see where, you know, who is involved, whose hands touched it, and you feel that sense of appreciation and connection. And it's incredible. It just sometimes, unfortunately, those dresses are like, oh, from recycled materials are like $150 a piece. And it looks very like regular looking. But I think when it comes to food, this is entirely different. And I love the message that I think I even mentioned during the intro, that you said that nutrition and food and the mix of food it's different for a different breed. So like using my limited knowledge as a nutritionist for dogs, so I'm thinking about Ben, the English bulldog across the street that's Rocky, and who is I just forgot the breed, right? But earlier today I was playing with a German shepherd that's less than a year old. And like, how are they different? Like, do you guys actually customize based on the breed, or like, were any bags, any kibble will do for them?
Yeah, we definitely do. And we've tried to simplify that. So it really depends on like the product direction you want to go. So like, if, you know, to start, there's perfect kibble. And then we're going to recommend like different toppers that you can put on your food as you go through this personalization quiz, that like a lot of research went into it, both on the breed. So we looked at, to start, the top 25 breeds. And then we said, what are the most common health issues in those according to research? And then we tried to formulate around that. The other thing is if you're moving, so we also have another product called Perfect Dog Food Mix. And so That's like a Betty Crocker mix for dogs, where you take this bag of powder and then you put it on 8 pounds of meat and it'll make an AFCO complete and balanced meal across like many different meats. Like I think 10 different proteins, like chicken, beef, turkey, fish, pork. We even have an almost vegan recipe. Like we have like lots of recipes. We just launched like a bison recipe, an elk recipe, because we're like in a really interesting spot as a brand. On the one hand, we definitely serve a lot. Like I'm based in Austin. We serve a lot of people who are in cities, of course, as like you would imagine. But then we have like really interesting people who are either part of RV life or they like live out in the open on like 100-acre like cool house. So a lot of different types of people we're serving. And it was this big request, like, you know, can I mix elk meat or like other types of meat, venison, in with Perfect Dog Food Mix? So we just launched those recipes. Very excited about that as well. But you know, that was like another example of me just continuing to create new products for my own dog. And so I started during the pandemic getting really into cooking fresh food at home for myself and my wife. And as I really got into that, of course, I was like, okay, well, what can I do for my dog? So then I started trying all of the different premixes on the market, and I hate chopping carrots so much. And a lot of them are like mixed 10 ingredients and they only work with one meat. I was like, this is so inconvenient. And so like, we've made a really easy way to meal prep for your dog. Again, this also costs like 40% less than Perfect Kibble and like a lot of the fresh dog food brands like Farmer's Dog, Ollie, Pet Plate, stuff like that. So I tried to create it as something, to be totally honest with you, not only did I want to have something that was just like healthier, like if you just go into our ingredients, it's like no rice, no potato, no peas, no legumes. That's a company-wide never list thing, but also it's like not in this product. The product's also low carb. Most fresh food brands online are 40 to 50% carbs. So that's like one way that they kind of like, I almost respect them as business people for doing that, because it's like it's really hard out there, but at the same time, like, that's awful for our dogs. And so at Yum Wolf, we are like absolutely not willing to have high carb food. So you know, and I didn't even mention like our new sustainability pledge, which I'll have to get to, but like that, I just keep racking up the costs here. But it's honestly just like I'm trying to like envision what it's like to order from a brand. So I'm saying, like, what do I want in my dog's food? Especially as I dive deeper and deeper into nutrition myself. Then I'm saying, okay, like, how do I want it to arrive to me? And so that's why we went into biodegradable packaging last year. So Perfect Kibble and Perfect Dog Food Mix both have biodegradable packaging now, which does cost more. But in 5 to 7 years, it's like no longer in a landfill. So that's like been a really important thing to me. We just started planting a tree with every order too. So we have a lot more coming on that.
Wow.
But you know, ultimately, when we're personalizing, you know, like we have a lot of other recipes that are really personalized around Perfect Dog Food Mix, especially for dogs with allergies or, you know, they have like very specific health issues that people are facing. Like, we've really tried to kind of make that our like playground for where we can create very creative recipes.
Wow. I mean, I literally opened the bag. It was like that fresh scent of dog food I've never experienced before. And looking at the ingredients, literally from the omega 3s, 6, and I was thinking like, oh my God, I think I could eat this myself. So
you could. I wouldn't recommend it unless you really like beef liver, but definitely made for a dog palate. But you know, and that's one of the challenges with dog food too. Like, it is interesting when you dive into a new industry, because for as much as people, for instance, like gut health, we care about gut health. I'll just like pull out a random brand, like Hilma also cares about gut health for humans. Haven't tried their products, can't speak to them, but love their branding. So when you're thinking about like digestive issues and like how you communicate that to potential customers, for human, it's very personal. So with humans, it's like, my stomach is killing me and I woke up at 4 a.m. This was both you and me last night. the can't say what's been happening to me over the last couple of days, but hopefully this passes for both of us. With dogs though, you don't have that same like personal pain. You know, you see your dog in pain, you maybe see your dog in pain. Like, you know, you could definitely smell their gas, but it is a personal pain too, but in a very different way. And so when we're trying to communicate the importance of people's, of the health of your dogs and how nutrition can play into that, it can be very challenging. And I would like to think that most of the people looking at our brand at this point, do recognize dogs as biological creatures, but certainly in a lot of our Facebook comments, we'll still see people who come to us with like, you know, I've been feeding my dog the same, you know, some crappy thing since the 50s. And, you know, that dog lived to be 17 years old. And I was like, okay, well, yeah, I too have met people who eat McDonald's every day and live to be very old. But for the average person, like that person is probably going to have very serious heart issues. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of times people don't recognize that like dogs are biologically very, very almost the same as humans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one interesting tidbit from what I've learned too, is I think I'm not a proponent of the raw diet, but our new product does, Perfect Feast is going to have we're taking some of the best parts of raw diet and incorporating it into that. And what I love about that part of pet food is that people tend to be very anti-synthetic vitamins and minerals. That's like a whole thing we probably won't dive into today, but you can typically get higher quality vitamins and minerals by eating organ meat. And that's going to be higher quality than like plant-based sources usually. And it's all like, we're just talking like from an absorption standpoint, like, to start, like, for instance, if you have, vitamin K1 from a, vitamin K1 usually comes from a plant versus vitamin K2 might come from like an animal source. So like the plant version might be 10 to 20% absorption rate, whereas like the K2 animal version might be like 80 or 90% absorption rate. And then there's all sorts of stuff that we're still honestly at the very bleeding edge of research on, talking about how like the different types actually flow through the body differently too. So it's very interesting stuff. I mean, it's like obviously a huge passion of mine.
I love it. Oh, now I got to ask you something beyond dog food. Like if you're willing to share, like what are some of the brands or the types of vitamins or supplements that you take on a regular basis?
I'm always trying new stuff, but vitamin K2 has been a pretty big one for me lately. You know, so I went on keto for 2 years during the pandemic, and I'm a big, big fan of keto. However, my LDL did go through the roof, and also like the small particle LDL did as part of that. And so I was pretty concerned by those results. So I went off keto. I've remained low carb, but you know, I've been I've tried to be very like adamant about heart health type stuff since then. So I've incorporated vitamin K2 into my personal diet. Generally speaking, I try to be low carb, limit my I just try to eat real foods. I'm by no means perfect, especially on the weekends, but I like, for instance, even if I'm going to go out, like cod liver oil, ever since writing this book, is like a daily part of my life.
Oh my God. I'm taking it every day too.
Yeah. Well, you're probably going to live to be like over 100 then.
Oh,
the
good.
Just add a MCT oil to it with lauric acid. And that's really like the summary of my book, is kind of this trifecta of combining coconut oil, fish oil, and fiber, which I call fiber the carbohydrate superfat. My book's all about these synergistic effects that these superfats have on each other. And so this is research that's really only a few years old that I've summarized in, I think I've been told, in a pretty easy to read way, but I go pretty deep into 162 clinical studies talking about, you know, one, just presenting this case of like, you know, if you feed a dog or a human as well, by the way, this all works on humans. Yeah. If we feed dogs this combination of fish oil, which is like high, typically high in the DHA type of omega-3. So ALA from hemp seed or flax seed, also very beneficial for microbiome diversity. Mm-hmm. It is not the type of omega-3 that like has all of these purported health benefits in heart health and pretty much everything. Like DHA from fish oil is like, it's just like a simple checkbox, like going to make you healthier. Mm-hmm. So I talk a lot about this in my book. You know, when we combine that with coconut oil, and specifically the even better thing to do would be like MCT, as long as it contains lauric acid, which a lot of people are going to look like, if you're on keto, you're usually looking for the MCT that doesn't have it, because it doesn't, lauric acid doesn't convert into ketones. So, but the thing is that the lauric acid is actually an important part, because what happens is that like both of them are anti-inflammatory, coconut oil, fish oil, but when you combine them together, you get even additional anti-inflammatory benefits than you would have expected just from like both 1 + 1 = 2. This is like 1 + 1 = 3. So it's very cool. And then when we combine fiber, that actually increases the absorption of the omega-3 into cells. So not only are you getting these core benefits, you are getting reduced inflammation. You're also getting microbiome diversity. So that's really important. A lot of people like to just talk about like reduced inflammation and kind of call it there, because like let's keep it simple here. But the microbiome part is like super important, and microbiome diversity is the most important biomarker of longevity in microbiome research. So essentially it's linked to lower obesity, lower diabetes, better heart health, living longer. So just like everything to keep us alive longer. That's microbiome diversity. And so when you have the lauric acid in the MCT, that's kind of like a double effect, that each individually they have these positive synergies, even on the biochemical level, with omega-3s. So it's really just boosting the anti-inflammatory effects and really good for gut health overall. And so that's what the book's about. I go into it pretty heavily. And, you know, I think that it's still a pretty easy read, but, you know, I really wanted to just like go deep into the research to support this case. And like, if anyone were going to come at me, because we all know how controversial coconut oil is as an ingredient, I wanted to create a case that, oh yeah, especially in humans. And that one I think is a lot more complex than dogs. Cause dogs, like really every study out there shows that dogs can eat saturated fat and it has like no effect on their longevity, no negative effect. Mm-hmm. So, you know, dogs are like primarily carnivores, and it makes a lot of sense that they can eat it pretty healthy and heavily and be healthy because of it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I just, as you're talking, I realized I currently have access to all of it. You know, cod liver, I think you said cod liver oil. I think I was thinking about codfish oil, which I have. And MCT oil, also it's accessible here at home. I never thought about taking them in combination, fiber pills as well. So it'll be really cool to combine some of that and just to see how I feel. And of course, I'm going to be reaching here. I mean, there's just so much talk about this. I still don't know how I feel about like seed in general. It's just like,
why is that?
So this is the daily, the pre and probiotics supplement.
That's I definitely know what seed is, but why do you feel conflicted about it?
Oh, it was, you know, I think it's interesting because a lot of it, like when you take something new, you get the daily emails. It's beautiful too. And it's like, I think it took me a little bit longer than what they said, like 3 to 5 days to actually get used to it. And there was like some ups and downs. And the other brand that I was taking is called Give Nutrition. I'm trying to find the right, not the perfect, just something that that really works for my body. And I also, because I learned that we're supposed to kind of just switch out our pre-probiotics every 2 to 3 months or so, that's why I started exploring this new one, because it looks so good and everybody's saying it's perfect. So I'm going to finish this and see if I'm going to try different things to see how it works. Have you taken this before?
I haven't. I've had friends who did, and I haven't heard anything bad. And I think it's like pretty, I love their brand. And yeah. I mean, the fact that like Bobby Parrish from Flav City reps them pretty heavily is like a huge like plus. He cares a lot about ingredients.
That's why I did it, because I interviewed him way before he was like, I interviewed him when he had 100,000 subscribers, and I just knew that guy would take off, and he's so serious about this. And because of him, I think it's lovely. Don't get me wrong. I think it's, you know, like, I guess sometimes when we buy these things, we're like waiting for some sort of transformation. They're going to become like a super.
I'm definitely going to watch that interview right after this. If I can't find it, I'm going to have you send me the link.
Oh my God. I'll send it right away. Cool. Seriously, talking to him is like very much like talking to you. It's there for some reason. I mean, not to like pivot our conversations completely, but for me to realize that when people are so passionate about something, it doesn't matter what it is, as art, food, nutrition, food for human, for dogs. And it's like, we could carry these conversations forever. And I was meeting Bobby for the first time. At that time, he was still doing, I believe, food prep. And he was talking about like at 100,000 subscribers, like his wife got this camera. He's like, let's put it to good use and figure out what works. He's like, wow, YouTube really tests your patience. And speaking of which, wow. I know you and I both are YouTubers as well. And I just learned, it was just like such a humbling experience. That conversation was fantastic. It was unfortunately an audio only. I did record the video, but I didn't ask him for permission to use it. So he was like pretty laid back on Zoom.
Oh, that's so great. I've started doing more shorts again and getting very regimented about that as I talk about these things. But interestingly enough, Bobby's been talking a lot about this new app that's buzzing right now called Seed Oil Scout. And I'm like super proud to kind of like drop their name. I heard about it from this girl who's like the coolest hippie I've ever met. And like, and I mean that in like the best, most loving way possible. But you know, someone who like really cares about their coffee as I do as well, cares about their coffee and like is so committed to not eating seed oils that she's using this new app. It's like Yelp for restaurants that don't have seed oils. So you rate restaurants on a scale, like some are like, this is a gut bomb, like don't go there. And then others are like, this is a friendly place to go. Mm-hmm. And I'm so happy that this app is coming out or out now. But so Bobby's been talking a lot about it lately. So you know that it's like, I mean, this is like what people like on the very low ground of the nutrition space are talking about right now. Excited to say that Yumwoof, I've been in touch with their team, and Yumwoof is going to be listed as one of their new products next month. And so hopefully this month, actually.
Congrats.
So very excited about that, because it's such a good overlap. Like it's honestly very rewarding for me, because we've been so adamant through this entire journey about not using seed oils. And so to have people starting to care about that now, and then to actually, I guess, get recognized enough that there are only like 7 brands on this app right now. It's not like there's like a lot of partners that they have currently. And so very, very excited about that. And
what's honestly, like,
it's called Seed Oil Scout.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Highly recommended.
Cool. I'm going to just drop it in Node here. So for
quick other side note about Seed, actually, that I think you'll find interesting is you should look at the people who are behind it, because I believe her name is Ariana Katz is the CEO, and she is an interesting person herself. She's also married to the son of Michael Ovitz, who is the founder of CAA, which was like the largest agency, like pretty much in Hollywood. They pretty much defined our childhood, like all the movies in the 80s and 90s, when you start to see how like they were all pretty much packaged by Michael Ovitz at CAA. You're like, dude, you were my entire youth. And he literally cornered Hollywood, you might say. Like, he cornered the agency market. It's pretty crazy. Yeah. And so, yeah, like if you start to look at the history of Seed, also you're just like, you find a lot of interesting characters.
Wow. I never thought about that. This is so funny. Like this is not the first time for me to be chatting with someone and realize that we have all these like mutual connections and all that. I'm going to go back and say, like, ask how you discovered Bobby again. You were watching his YouTube channel, or?
Yeah, it was, it, I first got interested in, I think I first started following Thomas DeLauer when I was like just getting into keto. Mm-hmm. You have to remember that, like, you know, before, I guess like 2020, before I realized that I have all these food allergies, I was living the Postmates life. Like, I was living my best life. I lived in New York City for 3 years running Coinsetter. That was very fun. Also, my 3 month burger binge was like amazingly delicious. But like at the end of that, I had to join Equinox. So wasn't necessarily like doing nutrition right at the time. And that extended up until really 2020 when I did this. I was essentially like, after I'd been having these like growing skin allergies for like my ever since I was 18. So almost 15 years of like me going to dermatologists, them recommending like different steroidal creams, topical steroids that like work until they don't. And then, you're always like going up and up to the next level. So it got to the point where I was even injected with steroids, and that worked for 6 months. My issues went away completely. It was like amazing, you know. And then like after that 6 months and the steroids lost their effectiveness, things mm-hmm. came back with a vengeance. And so that's when I really started to, I think somehow I was just on this path, probably because I started meditating, you know, like people who are into meditation tend to be more connected to Earth and the planet. And, you know, they start to think about ingredients, what we eat, because we're just like Earth. We're like literally made of Earth. So, you know, as I think I got deeper into the meditation, then I was like, maybe I don't have skin allergies. Maybe I have a food allergy, something no doctor had ever recommended or even made me think about. State of our current healthcare system, also vet system. So
yeah, what did you discover? Because I no idea where this conversation was going to go, but I also had like different eczema and then like triggers and like sun poisoning. I'm like, what's going on with my body in my early 30s? And
you and I are the same.
Yeah. Like what did you discover? What were the trigger foods for you?
Oh man, it was all my favorite ones, as I'm sure they always are. So otherwise we just wouldn't have the symptoms, right? like basically Mexican food. It was nuts, seeds, eggs were like primary culprits. And like a lot of seasonings, spices are made out of nuts and seeds. So yeah, it was unfortunate. My breakfast tacos at Torchy's had to go away. And you know, like all these things are also cooked in seed oils. And so, another really interesting thing to note is like, I recognized after doing a food elimination diet that I have all these allergies, but at the same time, you're not doing yourself any favors when you're like eating food that you're allergic to and you're furthering the inflammation with the omega-6s. So, one thing I've noticed interestingly enough is that like you can still, it depends how serious your allergy is. So, for me, like, I can often eat some of these like things I shouldn't be eating in moderation. And I do a lot better if I just talking about part of my supplement mix, we forgot creatine, which is, that's like a whole other story, but creatine is like pretty much every longevity person has registered that as being something you should definitely be taking. Peter Attia, people like that. So in addition to that, like if I'm going to go have a crazy night out and go get Mexican food, I will. It's actually Cinco de Mayo as we're recording this. So we'll see what happens. But I will actually take like a Coco Mega shot now, basically. And that I talk about this towards the end of my book. I go actually into a deep dive with a holistic veterinarian, and we have this whole chart showing how these Coco-Mega superfats actually inhibit the production of PGE2 and inflammatory cytokines. So you know, like you can be a little more bad if you just like kind of do some things that are going to inhibit these responses. I would equate it to like taking a histamine if you have allergies. So if you have an antihistamine, you know, hopefully that's going to help with your seasonal allergies. This is the same thing, but more related to pretty much any inflammation. So it could be food, it could be environmental allergies. You know, at Yum Wolf, we get a lot of dogs who have environmental allergies, but then see their need for medication go away a lot. And I attribute a lot of that to this Cocomega effect that we have.
So when you say Cocomega for like human supplements, is this a combination? And I'm like trying to look it up. I don't exactly what Cocomega entails. It's like omega 6 and a combination of supplements.
Yeah. And the reason why the word is hard to find is because I made it up. So I was debating whether I was gonna call the book the Cocomega effect or the canine Cocomega effect, and I chose canine Cocomega effect one because like I'm connecting with dog parents every day, but the other thing is I did want to leave the door open to possibly doing a human book later, because like all the serving amounts I give in this book are for dogs. They're pretty similar though. We operate the same ways. So like, I would say that, you know, if you're taking like a teaspoon of cod liver oil every day, that would be like a highly recommended amount. And then you could probably also take another teaspoon, maybe two of MCT oil, mm-hmm. as long as it has lauric acid. And you're going to get all these benefits. Just eat fiber, you know, like, this could be a salad. This could be like, there are many sources of fiber. Inulin though, you want soluble fiber, to like further promote this effect. And, but yeah, it's pretty simple. Like you can do all of this in less than a tablespoon, basically.
Wow. This is so cool. I had no idea. I mean, I can't believe that an hour has nearly gone by and we've been talking about nutrition and, you know, how you started the company. And I do want people to also know a bit about your background. So, Jaren, I know that we don't have a ton of time, but do you mind talking about, like, I know in your about page on your own website, you talk about the professional at the beginning, all the struggles and challenges that you had. And now you're running this company. It's successful. You're having a ton of fun. But what is your message to people who are maybe working full-time job and thinking they really want to start something on their own, on the side, perhaps still keeping their job, versus people who are thinking, I really want to just create something completely on my own, like become a creative entrepreneur, but that just seems so out of reach. Like, what have you learned? Or what's your words of, you know, wisdom from your experience?
I guess I tend to align with Napoleon's theory of giving your men two choices, victory or death. And we have to apply this to ourselves. So the real takeaway from that is to dive in, because like entrepreneurship, we all make mistakes. We all kind of go our own way. And it was many years until I feel like I actually became a good entrepreneur. In fact, like, I feel like it's only very recently that I do feel that way. I associate these with things that were not even really taught in today's modern world, because tech has been such a big part of startup culture. The whole idea has been like, go do something cool and then just like see if people come. And I don't really vibe with that. I'm more like, how do you make more revenue than the money you spend every month, and like build a business organically, especially if you're in CPG? So, you know, but you can apply that to SaaS too. Like, it can be applied anywhere, especially today. Mm. So, you know, I think that some of the most important things, like I was, I started out in investment banking and private equity for my first 4 years of my career. And I half joke when I say that I was lucky to be fired from my job. You know, I don't know if I would have ever quit. And because like that paycheck just like always keeps you wanting more, never happy, especially if you work in finance. Like, finance is literally set up to never make you happy, because you got to think about like the way that investment banking works. Like, if you're, let's say you're making like $300,000 a year as an associate. Mm-hmm. Well, you have a VP above you making like 800K or a million. And then that guy has someone above him, an MD, maybe making 5 to 10 million. And then that guy is directly dealing with these clients who operate or own billion-dollar companies and are billionaires. So like, it's a very toxic cycle that's always setting you up to compare yourself to people who are richer than you. And so, you know, one of the best things that we can have happen to us is be fired. And I was let go because I was like starting a company on the side called Ticketometer with my brother and some friends. And that was me basically taking $100,000 of my investment banking money bonuses and like throwing it into a trash can and lighting it on fire, making every mistake possible. Paying like developers to do terrible work. I was paying like just like stupid stuff. I threw an event at South by Southwest, which is cool, but like didn't have an ROI. Mm-hmm. So you know, you're learning little by little. You know, I would say that for everyone's like so different, it's like you just got to go in and like you'll ultimately probably just start like getting advice from people who like are kind of saying the things mm-hmm. that are at the stage you're at that you need to hear next. And you know, for me over the past I would say 2 years, it's really been about like connecting with my customers. Like I tend to be, as like anyone who's been listening can tell, very analytical about our formulations. Mm-hmm. And so that's great. Like, you know, you end up with like a very expensive product, but quality, let's not call it expensive, let's call it high quality. Mm-hmm. But you know, there are definitely issues when you formulate that way, because you know, you start to say like, we have more omega-3s than the others, we have more MCT than the others, we are low carb. And what you find is that like, that's not what like connects with people's heart. And so I feel like that's been for my personal development. And as I think about trying to build a brand and learning what that means, you know, mm-hmm. why should people trust us? Why should people come to us? And you know, there are other dog food brands out there that make high quality products. Mm-hmm. And so like, why of those options, like why are people going to come to us? So that's been my exploration, but that's only come on the tail of like, you know, I've been doing this since 2012 and really before. I mean, like, honestly, I'd been dabbling in entrepreneurship for years before that mm-hmm. inevitably got me fired and onto this path. And so, yeah, but that's the biggest thing I see people struggle with. Once they're there and like working on something, like then it's like there's so many things, there's always something to learn, and I guess that's what keeps it exciting.
Yeah, no, I love the message. Like you said, I've been an entrepreneur since 2016, officially LLC and everything, but podcast since 2014, and years before like that. You said even back in college, working friends on like software companies and building up a Taekwondo school and just all sorts of things that really got me very excited, very engaged. I really like to just ask one more question, Jaren, in terms of even in the entrepreneurial world, it's very easy trying to look around, compare ourselves to others and seeing people. For instance, I'm someone who's always just had my hands in so many different things. That's what's keeping me alive. But at the same time, I understand it's not like I'm replicating the success so that I can make a ton of money, hire, and you build a huge company. Whereas sometimes you look around, there are a lot of entrepreneurs who are so good at just building this one thing and just multiply, and then, you know, make more money. And as a result, they probably do end up having more time with their friends and family and can take time off. Like what's your thought on like these two different models?
You know, I feel like I'm really trying to figure out the same thing, to be perfectly honest. Like, the question becomes like, just to start, like, do you want to be a solopreneur or like have 10 employees? And I feel like the lifestyle of like solopreneur or five people or less is so much better than if you're like 100 people. Like 100 people is like a whole other thing, but that means you're making a big impact too. And so when you're a solopreneur, a lot of times, like, I think it's easy to feel like you could be doing more for the world. And so I can't say that I have the answer. In fact, this is something that I'm like working out with like my people I work with mm-hmm. and like talk about things like this with. And, you know, I think that I definitely don't think it's worth living life overly stressed. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can run a company and not have some stress. That's like really comes with the territory. Mm-hmm. But I think that if it's like chronic stress, like that's what I really felt when I was running CoinSetter. So mm-hmm. I was like living in New York City. I had a venture capital backed company. We raised $2 million for it. And I would be at my apartment in East Village on the weekend, just like sitting in my bed in darkness. And I would feel this like pain up here. It's like a chilling, stabbing pain. Yeah. And little did I know, that's what cortisol feels like. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like that was a time in my life where I was really striving for like things that were going to be ultimately meaningless for me. You know, you're just like carrying these like childhood wishes, but like kind of mm-hmm. like more in the way of it's going to be what other people want more than what you want. And so mm-hmm. I like to think about life through like, okay, if all of this is just like kind of a video game, and I'm walking through it, like, what do I want to experience next? Like, do I want to play the Yum Wolf video game and go work on that? Mm-hmm. Do I want to go like walk through the forest in my backyard? Mm-hmm. I'm kind of like trying to find balance there, but certainly like a big part of what I'm trying to accomplish next is growing. It's really like growing my impact that mm-hmm. I can have on the world and trying to expand that. And so, I will let you know on the next time we talk here what I've figured out.
Yeah, no, I love that. Absolutely. Because I'm hearing and seeing more and more people even on YouTube, like these not ultra successful, these are very successful YouTubers. They're all somehow listening to the same group of people and they scale up so much, including like Ali Abdaal. I'm thinking about like a number of entrepreneurs, and then they are all end up leaving, not Ali, but several of these entrepreneurs end up leaving YouTube. You don't see them anywhere anymore. The last video, it's like, we're really leaving. They're selling their cars and they're like closing down some programs. And I see a lot of them trying to multiply. And then now they just really want to trim down. And so part of me is thinking like, why do I have to go? I mean, I probably won't go through that path, but I wonder like why so many people do end up going through that path, the bigger, better, more, everything, and then realize that they're so much better off just by themselves or keeping, like you said, keeping a very small team who are not employees, maybe just contractors. So definitely something to a lot to think about.
I really respect people who can do that. I'm definitely like not the person to come to learn about delegation from. Like, oh man, it's terrible. I still run all of our Facebook ads personally, because every time I friggin' hire an agency or try to delegate it out, not only is that costing like anywhere between $3,000 to $8,000 a month, just like fees on top of the Facebook ads, but my CACs always go up whenever I hire someone else to do it. And so that's like a whole can of worms. I definitely think that they can be delegated. I definitely think there are people who can like run Facebook ads better than I can. Maybe not the account. I feel like I've gotten like decently good at that, but certainly the creatives, like in an era where creatives are the thing that matter most, there are certainly people who can create better creatives. So that's something like I've started delegating, but at the same time, I think that if any, like for people who are starting a CPG brand, which is very different from a tech company, the brand element is super important. And I think it really does come on to the founder to figure out like what your brand is. And so for me, that's something I've been working on for about 14 months now. Like, you know, we came to a point in the company after a little over a year in business that I was like, okay, we really need to differentiate ourselves and figure out what that is. And that's a very long road. And I don't think you can delegate that, but the more that I think we've kind of figured that out, the easier it's been to kind of like tell other people our message. And if they're excited about like destroying, seed oils and banning them entirely, or some road that gets close to that, I think that like we're able to connect, and then they're able to hopefully share our word, and not even because they're like, any reason except that like they care about this topic.
Mm. Yeah. I think the delegation and working with a team, until people actually roll up their sleeves and realize they have to do it as business owners, they never fully understand. I think, Jaren, for instance, as you were talking, I realized one of my struggles sometimes, and it kind of comes and comes and goes sometimes, is like you said, caring about something, your brand, whether it's a podcast or documentary, whatever it may be, so much, it is impossible to find anyone else to care nearly as much as you do. I mean, for you, it's the making of, it's the food itself, like literally, and you can't, I finally learned, you cannot force or ask anyone to care about as much as you do. It's not even fair, and it's not possible, so I, but at the same time, you still have to find ways for other people to be able to step into different corners of the businesses and help you out, and figuring out what that combination is for different types of businesses is absolutely an art. And it takes trials and errors. And then you have to, you have to be willing to not just make mistakes, be willing to spend money, waste money, and not have things work out all the time. That is not something, unfortunately, we learn in school, not even in college. So we just have to learn it as entrepreneurs.
You're so right.
As painful as it is. But Jaren, this has been a great conversation. I really look forward to resuming this, and I would love to know where, Young Wolf is like 6 months, a year from now. I want to see the graph that you're going to be drawing, creating for your Facebook ads. And please include me as part of the journey. And thank you so much for your time to chat with me and with us.
Yeah, excited to be friends now, and we'll definitely keep you on our journey, especially since you're such an advocate for gut health.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Please. And I love your way of reaching out to influencers, podcasters, and creators directly, and introducing the brand. And it means so much. I'm running a workshop, speaking of which, next Wednesday, for the next 2 weeks, to really help business owners and professionals know how to write for our top tier publications without having to hire a PR agency and all that. And so my clients are approaching me and was like, okay, that's it. I'm talking to a journalist and then two senior editors on how to do that. And people are signing up and learning how to do that themselves. So yeah, we're just excited. I'm literally like writing a lot of like one-on-one emails, and those convert so much better than like ads or you're like a YouTube short or even on my email list. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, definitely. I like to joke with a couple of friends right now that it's like email is like still like, I would say like the best way to meet people. If you can like, I think you and I probably have very similar inboxes, I would imagine, where like it's like half of my time is just like deleting random automated messages that people are sending me. So I like to joke that email is being broken as we speak. And like with ChatGPT and all this stuff and AI, like it's about to get way worse. So I think we're actually going to, it's a very interesting time right now where like you can still meet people over email. Mm-hmm. I really think that, I mean, people have been talking for 10 plus years about like, oh, email's going away and it's going to move to Messenger and all that. And that still hasn't happened. But something is going to definitely change with email because of just like how spammy it's becoming. So it should be very interesting to see like how people meet new people online over the next, like even 10 years from now. I don't even think we can fathom it right now.
It's so true. And I can, I guess sometimes I try to hire really to work with really young people. That it's so tough, by the way. I'm no longer working with teenagers. You got to be at least like, I don't know, 28 or something. No way. It's like,
fake. I've definitely thought about doing that. That's so funny.
Yeah, seriously, it's like, what? I cannot work with you through Instagram DMs. I mean, I just can't do that. It has to be through email or a system that's connected to our email. There has to be, I mean, still like really the easiest way for anybody to get in touch with me is still email. It's my Gmail, faceworld@gmail.com. I'm just going to throw it out there. But to your point, it's like the Gmail filter is not great. Sometimes I lose the emails I really need access to. And I try Superhuman as well. It's like that's really interesting with the shortcuts and everything. But we'll see where that goes.
We could have a whole episode just about email communication. I too have like a lot to say about this, but that's so funny. That you've like even tried high schoolers and like, and yeah, like it's impossible for me as well to like communicate mm-hmm. over DMs. It's like, I may not respond to someone in for 4 days if they do that.
It's funny that you said 4 days. To me, same thing. If somebody emailed me about like working together, whatever, if I waited even 24 hours, I'm like, oh my God, I'm usually like, boom, like just back and forth. But like, I've tried to work with people, like especially young people these days, and they go, I do check my email about like once a week. And it blows my mind of like how much I can't even imagine. Like if I don't check my email for a week, like all these things gonna come through. And so that, we got to continue.
My wife and I are about to do that in Tulum starting next weekend. We're going to spend a week in Tulum and hope for the best on our emails.
Yeah, but you know, you already set expectations. You know, this is pre-planned, but there are many people who don't check their emails at all, and or at the most once a week. So to be continued, guys. But thank you so much, Jaren, for your time here. And I'm going to take us offline and hope we'll resume the conversation in the future, too.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, Faye. So much fun being here with you.
Oh, likewise. Bye, guys. We're going to go off live stream now. Bye.
Bye.